I'd like to begin this afternoon by talking about perceptions, because perception acts upon our feelings and influences our feelings. So, the example was given of you see an insect, you know, inside the house, or an insect outside the house, and it's your perception that changes. So what is perception? Perception is, it's connected very much to memory and language, and it's conditioned by culture, by experience. It's a way in which we put things into categories. We know, you know, we look at a chair, so it could be, you know, it could be a folding chair, it could be an upholstered chair, it could be a patio chair, but still the word chair comes to mind. We know it's something to sit on. And so perception identifies things for us. So we hear a sound outside, and we know it's the sound of a bird. You know, and it's, we don't have to think about it. We know it immediately. So it co-arises with the sense contact. We smell, you know, burnt toast. You know, we know exactly what it is right away. One may have a pleasant feeling tone associated with it. The other may have an unpleasant feeling tone associated with it. But it's culturally determined, you know. So if there's, you know, a smell of burning toast, and your, you know, your mom always used to make something really yummy, and when you were a kid, and that smell is somehow associated with it, you might not experience the smell of burnt toast as unpleasant. It might be, it might have pleasant associations for you. So, sometimes, you know, we things come into our sense awareness, sense consciousness, and we don't really know what it is. So sometimes there's this just not knowing, it's a different kind of experience. Like you see a shape in twilight, you know, and you don't really know what it is, or there's a sound and you hear it and you just don't know. So there's this kind of inquiry, this investigation, like, you listen, or you look, what is that? And it's a different kind of experience than, you know, when we just have the perception and we know it, and we kind of, you know, perceptions. When we live in perception, we tend to just live on the surface of things. You know, we'll name it, and we don't look deeply at it to see its real nature. And this can happen in relationships where, you know, you say, oh, that's Joe. You know, that's Cassie. You know, and oh, you know, I know who they are. And you don't know, you don't see that Cassie is just looking radiant, or, you know, Joe is looking very sad. You know, we're just kind of seeing them and not seeing them, because we're just in the immediate perception. So perceptions can alter the feelings that we experience, perceptual overlays. So a story that I read that I think illustrates this. It shows how the circumstances that we may, you know, feel are one way or another, you know, are simply what they are, but our perception makes us feel positive or feel negative. So there's a story of a man, this is an old Taoist story, and so You can think of a, you know, a man living in, you know, somewhere in ancient rural China, and at the time where there were, you know, there were warlords in different places, and this man had, you know, some property, and he had a number of horses that he raised, and one day one of his horses ran off, and his neighbors said, "Oh, that's so unfortunate," and the man said, "We'll see," and so then a few days later, the runaway horse came back with another horse, a wild horse, and you know, had kind of connected and just brought it back, and the neighbors saw this new horse, and they said, "Oh, that's so fortunate," and the man said, "We'll see." And so so the man had a son who, you know, a grown-up son who was helping him and his property. And so this son was training the horse and, you know, training it to be ridden. And in the course of doing it, in the course of, you know, trying to train the horse, the son fell and broke his leg. And the neighbors said, "Oh, that's so unfortunate." And the man said, "We'll see." And so then one of the warlords came around and was inscripting, you know, the young men in the neighborhood and taking them off to fight in the army. But he didn't take the son who had a broken leg. And the neighbors said, "Oh, you're so lucky. That's so fortunate. We'll see. Don't know. Seems so." So perceptions, you know, really influence how we feel about things. And perceptions are attitudes, beliefs, ideas, thoughts that, you know, we've been brought up with in our families, in our culture. Even our language shapes our perceptions. You know, how one language expresses something may be very different from how another language does. So it's just to mention, you know, that it's not just the direct sensory, you know. This morning I talked about how, you know, there's a sense object, a sense organ, and sense consciousness, and from the overlap of these three arises contact, and with contact arises feeling tone, and we experience feeling tone as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and so just to bring in that it's not just the pure sensory experience that gives rise to feeling tone, but it's also our conditioning, our cultural conditioning, and perceptions, thoughts, beliefs, and so on. Is that clear? So I want to look at this chart. And if you can't see it, you might want to just come and have a look at it. So we have these three circles overlapping, the sense object, the sense organ, and sense consciousness. And then there's a place in the center where all three are present. And so that is contact, and then I put a little arrow where feeling tone arises from sense contact, that thoughts, perceptions, and judgments condition the feeling tone that arises. And so this chart is illustrating a process which is a selfless process. That as feeling tone, as pleasant feeling tone arises, you know, because of psychological, physiological conditions, we want the pleasant experience. We're wanting more of it, you know, as somebody described, you know, sitting by the water in the sun, everything's beautiful. I want this to continue. And that is craving. And the Buddha pointed to craving as the cause of suffering. So in his expression of the path of the path to awakening, he taught the Four Noble Truths. You know, he discussed the Four Noble Truths, and he said that there is suffering, and the cause of and the second, that's the first noble truth, which is to be comprehended from our own experience, to say this is suffering. I recognize, you know, when suffering arises, to recognize and comprehend and understand what it is. So it's a direct experience. From direct experience, we learn what is suffering. And then he said the cause of suffering is craving. So craving is wanting things to be other than they are. So what is it that we want to be other than they are? And it's feelings. We want pleasant feelings to continue and be permanent. And we want unpleasant feelings to not arise and to go away. And we basically ignore neutral feelings. So what happens with the arising of sensory experience and a feeling tone co-arising with it, conditioned by perception perhaps, and craving arises. So craving isn't just wanting, it's also not wanting. The craving has two sides, wanting and not wanting. So it's both grasping and aversion are forms of craving. And from craving arises clinging. So craving is just that immediate wanting more or wanting to get rid of something. And clinging is when we start plotting, planning, strategizing. How are we going to do this? And we, you know, we're starting to invest our thinking, our, you know, our energies and so on. You know, at lunch today there was that delicious chocolate quinoa cake. The feeling was you know, I guess for most people, maybe not for you, if you don't like chocolate, but it was pleasant, so pleasant. And then, and, you know, when you have that last bite, maybe craving arises, like, I want more. And then the clinging comes in when you think, oh, I wonder if there's any more, and if I walk into the dining hall and I take a second piece, will anybody notice? You know, and out of that becomes reification of self. So we're creating a whole sense of self around that craving and clinging. So the clinging is, you know, the becoming. So, So the important thing to realize about this whole process of dependent origination, which is a kind of a taking apart and illustrating and explaining the second noble truth, is that there's no self behind it. It's not that I am reaching out, that there's a self that is reaching out and grasping and wanting more. It's that the self comes into being through the arising of pleasant feeling, craving for more, the process of clinging, and then the becoming. And craving keeps recurring because the causes and conditions for its reappearance keep reoccurring. So the Buddha, you know, talked about this in a very simple statement. So he said, when this is, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. When this is not, that does not come to be. With the cessation of that, of this, that ceases. So we're alive, so we have sense organs, we have sense consciousness, and so contact is continually occurring. We're continually taking in the world through our sense organs. Feelings are arising. But what the Buddha taught in his teaching on mindfulness is that we can place a wedge of awareness, a wedge of mindfulness, between the feeling tone and the craving. So if we're aware of feeling tone, if we're aware of, oh, this is pleasant, or this is unpleasant, and we see that reactivity comes up, we have the capacity to not get into the whole craving, clinging, and reification of self, you know, creating a whole self around wanting and not wanting. So this is, you know, a really important piece of practice, that when we notice that, I mean, there's nothing wrong with enjoying pleasant feelings, but when then we notice that we're craving more and more and more, you know, which is a, you know, can even become an addiction. That's kind of what an addiction is wanting more and more and more and more. Then we can recognize that what we're craving really is just pleasant feelings, and we can we just enjoy the pleasant and allow the pleasant to be impermanent. You know, accept the pleasant as pleasant and recognize that it's nothing that can be held on to. So one of the things that's really important to open to as we're working with pleasant and unpleasant feelings and neutral feelings is opening our developing an attitude of openness to what is unpleasant. We have a kind of a closed mind about unpleasant feelings. I mean, because Well, it's in a way it's natural that you know, we don't want to experience unpleasant feelings because they're painful. But in order to break this conditioned chain and stop this kind of cycle of suffering and this continuing reification of self, which sees that, you know, I want more of this, I want to get rid of that, the kind of drivenness that we are we can experience in our lives when we're constantly chasing after pleasant experiences and trying to get rid of unpleasant experiences, is, you know, that we need to look at our preconceptions about unpleasant feelings and suffering, because actually it's, you know, our relationship with them can close us to the possibility of learning and developing and recognizing the true nature of unpleasant feelings and recognizing our capacity, the strength and the capacity that we have to be with unpleasant feelings. Because life dishes up unpleasant feelings, doesn't it? Life dishes up, you know, at least as much difficulty and pain as it does, you know, pleasant and easy and comfortable experiences. So, we have a kind of prejudice and negative outlook toward suffering, but you know, I'd like to suggest that maybe we can open our minds and give suffering a chance to teach us.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I started my practice, one of the things I noticed was that there was a lot of kind of up and down in my practice. You know, that sometimes I felt really calm and my mind was very present, and then things, you know, habits would kick in and I'd experience a lot of pain, not only from my own mind but like the feedback from the world. You know, if I would lose it or, you know, act in some way that was greedy or self-absorbed, you know, then I experienced that kind of kickback from the world and from life. And it became clear to me that I was really learning a lot more, because then I'd need to examine, well, you know, what just happened? You know, what just happened? And I realized that I was learning a lot more from the difficulty, from the pain of, you know, what my reactivity or my confusion or mental habits had created. Then, you know, I mean the openness, the calmness, the peacefulness was very nice. And I think that, you know, we also need that to nourish us. But we really learn a lot from the suffering that we have. So when we have, you know, so we have so many different kinds of disappointments and losses and illness and aging, all of these experiences that are part of life. And so, you know, what do they give us? You know, first of all, you know, we're probably all here, we're probably all in some way engaging in the path because of the pain and the unpleasant experiences and the suffering in our life, right? Because if things were all easy and comfortable, we would probably just be going along and not questioning anything. We'd just be expecting everything to stay that way. So you know, unpleasant feelings and suffering can actually help us to, you know, engage more deeply with life. In fact, it's the story of the Buddha's journey and seeking in awakening came from his insight or his experience of, you know, when he went outside the palace walls and he saw aging, illness, and death, and you know, he had been protected from all unpleasant experiences, and when he went out and saw these experiences, that's what helped him to see with new eyes, you know, his very protected life in the palace of his father, and he left and went on his journey to understand how to become free of suffering. So unpleasant feelings and suffering can help us when we see how our behavior can cause harm. You know, our unskillful behavior can cause harm to ourselves and others. We can become more conscious of how we're causing suffering, and it can help us overcome pride if we have, you know, pride or feeling somehow this sense of, you know, I'm better than, or I'm not like other people who do these things. You know, by having the experience of encountering our own suffering, we can, it helps us to really engage more deeply with humanity. It also helps us to develop our sense of ethics, that we don't, you know, when we experience suffering ourselves and when we cause suffering to others, that we can recognize we can realize the cause and effect between our actions and results. And so when we see how unpleasant feelings and suffering, you know, unpleasant feelings, pain, and suffering arise, it gives rise to renunciation, a desire to let go of these habits, a desire to relinquish, you know, the harm that we're causing ourselves and others, and in a way, renunciation and compassion are very similar, because renunciation is wanting to free ourselves of these habits which cause harm, and compassion is wanting to help others become free of their suffering. So they're very connected. So we can work with unpleasant feelings and suffering by experiencing them in the body. You know, so for example, if we're sitting in meditation and we feel a little bit of discomfort, rather than immediately changing our posture, we can bring, as we were discussing this morning, bring a kind of investigative, mindful investigation to the sensation of discomfort, and explore, move into it, explore what it is, and, you know, is there a contraction? Is there what's the inner experience of that? And as we move deeply into it with mindful investigation, we can discover that it's not just a solid thing. It's something that is made up of a number of different elements. Maybe there's heat, maybe there's a sharpness, maybe there's a tightness. And even just bringing our attention into that can shift, it can change. And we actually will notice, you know, that there are spaces in that, you know, what we're calling pain and what we, you know, imagine is a kind of a solid thing. And in the same way, as we were talking about this morning, in the experience of emotional pain, to bring our mindful investigation to this, and to recognize that it too is not a solid thing. It's something that shifts and moves, and that there are spaces in, you know, whether it's grief or anger or fear or grasping, that when we're really attending to it, that there are spaces in that experience. And so so memories also we can work with in this way, to see its impermanent and conditioned nature. And also, I was going to go on to pleasant feelings, but being open, you know, being open to unpleasant feelings is really very important, because, you know, what happens when something arises, when an unpleasant feeling arises, this desire, this aversion, you know, this craving expressed as aversion, wants to get rid of it immediately, wants to get rid of it, wants to avoid it, wants to distract us from the experience. So I feel a little bit sad, I feel a little bit lonely, you know, so maybe I'll turn on the computer, maybe I'll turn on the TV, maybe I'll open the fridge, you know. So all of these ways that we enact craving and try to protect ourselves from the experience of unpleasant feelings, and this reification of a self that happens, you know, that so I feel a little bit lonely, and then so I turn on the TV or I open the fridge. And then there's this thought process that is going on about, you know, myself, not good enough, not wanted, not, you know, and so on. And so is there a way to turn toward those feelings and to open to those feelings that are unpleasant, that are difficult, and be with them? Welcome them. Give them space to be known. Receive them. So this is really a very important piece of our practice, because when we stop craving, turning away from unpleasant and just always seeking pleasant, the sense of self and the corresponding suffering ceases. So we're kind of cutting through that whole, you know, and it's, you know, I wrote there and I kind of made some shading marks. It's all happening in the context of an underlying ignorance, of not knowing, of not being aware, of just being on automatic pilot, right? We're just, you know, it's just, we're just allowing these, the craving to drive us. But when we bring that wedge of mindfulness in, you know, we see it. That's pleasant, you know. So, and the mind begins to get it, you know, when we cultivate mindfulness of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experiences, the mind begins to realize that it can't hold on to these things. So pleasant, unpleasant, you know, the reactivity kind of just, you know, diminishes. Yeah, oh, this, it's a sunny day, you know, that's lovely. And comes and goes. It's not that we don't enjoy pleasant things, but we're not clinging to them because we know we can't. That's the definition of dukkha. I wasn't watching the time, and I realize I've come right to the edge of our time. I wanted to just check in. Is there any? This is a model, you know. It's a model. It's theoretical. It looks theoretical here. It's a model, but it's something that we can really use as a lens to look at what's happening moment by moment. And that's what I'm inviting you to do now, is to look at your own experience, that we need to, you know, develop this capacity, the mindful attention, that we can look at the arising of pleasant, unpleasant craving. We can maybe, when we notice the pleasant, maybe we can just accept a pleasant and not move into craving, or if we notice the craving arising, we cannot move into clinging, just be aware, well, there's craving, you know. So it's really for us to work with and discover how this unfolds, and in this process to become free of this cycle. You know, this is the cycle of suffering that the Buddha talked about. So it's really important to not judge, right? Not judge when craving arises. So, you know, that's really, really important to say, oh, you know, I'm such a greedy person, or I'm such an aversive person. It's selfless. It's conditioned. It's coming from the causes and conditions of our lives that, you know, we learn to chase pleasant experiences and to run away or avoid unpleasant. So So notice when reactions occur as a result of the feelings. And I talked about the perceptual overlay, but it doesn't matter if it comes from a direct sensation or from a perception. Just so we notice when reactions occur. And notice the ways in which craving occurs. Like, do you feel it in your body? Do you feel your body contracting? Do you feel your body getting tight or stiff? Do you feel it in your mind? Do you experience it in your mind as thoughts and imaginations and, you know, a kind of a leaning into, an excitement perhaps of wanting, or resistance, or sadness? And can you see the suffering that is inherent in craving? Can you, as when the pleasant feeling arises, and this is really key, can you notice that when craving arises, it's an experience of suffering? So I think that's really, really key to give attention to that in your sittings and in your activities during the day. So, because when we really recognize that there's no contentment, there's no happiness to be found in continual craving and clinging, we let go. We do let go. We don't want to suffer, but we don't recognize the suffering. We're blind to the suffering. If somebody had asked me when I began practice, you know, are you suffering? I said, I'm not suffering. You know, I have a little fear, but I'm not suffering. So, yeah. So, thank you for your attention to this. And I encourage you to continue working with it.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.